You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now, I'm sharing it all. Join me for unfiltered talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the All-Star Week in Major League Baseball means no Royals and a lot more after hours here this week on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. Chris Unocero is alongside. We're with you till 9 o'clock tonight as we recap what we saw from the Royals over the weekend. We talk a little bit about the All-Star break. Of course, the home run derbies tonight. Everybody's waiting around for the next couple of weeks with the July 31st trade deadline. Will the Royals be buyers or sellers? I'll talk a little bit about that as we go along. Big hit for the Royals today. The announcement of Michael Lorenzen going on the IL. We may go into more depth on that a little bit later on in our show. We've also got news on the Kansas City Chiefs front. Frank White with an announcement this week, or I should say in a letter he sent to Mike Kehoe yesterday, according to reports that we may discuss a little bit. A major sale in Major League Baseball and some signings or lack thereof that is causing some headlines to be written across the National Football League. Let's kick things off with what we saw over the weekend for the Kansas City Royals. Three games against the Mets at Kauffman before the All-Star break this week. It got off to a up and down start on Friday. Royals go down 1-0 in the third inning. They come back and score 1 in the sixth, 2 in the seventh. A multi-hit game for 4 separate Royals, including Salvi, Jonathan India, Bobby, and Vinny. 1-5 of the order really did its job in Friday's game. Unfortunately, the bullpen did not do theirs. Steven Cruz, Carlos Estevez, and Taylor Clark. It was a cataclysmic collapse in the 8th and 9th innings that led to an 8-3 loss for the Kansas City Royals on Friday. Saturday, Royals come back. They were much more competitive throughout the course of the game, but still managed to come up short 3-1. The bats were not there on Saturday. Only 4 hits as a team, 2 of them from Jonathan India. Also had that, let's just call it controversial call on second base, where Bobby Witt Jr. was 100% unequivocally and absolutely safe at second base. He was called safe on the field. They reviewed it and said, nope, after the fact, he's out, when there was absolutely no evidence, no indisputable evidence to overturn that one. So they lose the first 2 of the series. They got to come back yesterday, try to salvage something before we hit the All-Star break. And that's exactly what they did yesterday. A 3-2 win for Kansas City, buoyed by a run in the bottom of the ninth off the bat of Nick Lofton, who pinch hit. It was his second walk-off of the homestand as the Royals 10 hits as a team. But again, the thing with this team all year has been that they struggle with runners in scoring position. They were 0-10 with runners in scoring position on Friday. Saturday, it was another struggle. Yesterday, they go 2-6, which isn't awful by any stretch. But when you have 10 hits as a team and you only drive in 3 runs, they put a lot of pressure on the pitching yesterday. And Noah Cameron, another outstanding start, 6 2/3 scoreless. He struck out 8. He gets to the All-Star break with a 2.31 ERA, becoming just the second starting pitcher in the last 5 years of baseball with at least 10 starts in his rookie year with a sub-2.5 ERA at the All-Star break. That's what Noah Cameron has done. Schreiber and Ursig with scoreless appearances. Carlos Estevez gave up 2 earned runs in the 9th inning against New York, but managed to hold on and pick himself up the win on top of his 5th blown save. That's kind of a strange stat line. That's a weird one to read in the box score. He got a blown save and the win, did Carlos Estevez yesterday for Kansas City.
Yeah, I'm not. I know a lot of people are kind of freaking out about this whole situation here, because the Royals haven't been looking that great here since the start of June, and certainly I know this month they've been a lot better. What do they got? 2 losses on the month now.
Yeah, so, they've been great.
Actually, 3 losses on the month. So like they've certainly stepped things up here in the first couple weeks of the year. I mean, first couple weeks of the month. But there were a lot of guys here at 96.5 The Fan on the day parts who were kind of, the Royals are done. And now I kind of feel like there's a little bit of optimism, if you will. Certainly injuries are a problem for the team. But I feel like there's some reason for optimism. We kind of seen that this month. They've been a lot more competitive. Their bats have starting to come to life. Not like in a crazy way. Certainly, you look at the pitching, and it's still kind of carrying them in a lot of these games. But I do think if they get healthy in their rotation, I know they just put Lorenzen on the IL. If they can get a little bit healthier, if somehow you can get like Cole Reagan's back, I know like right now it's looking a little dicey as far as his future this year, but if they can get something back and they can get some sort of hope there as far as them making the playoffs. I think at this point we can still kind of get our hopes up as that this team might be able to make a run and sneak into the playoffs.
They've kind of leveled the ship out here a little bit. You mentioned the struggles in June. They were 1-8 in their last 9 games in the month of June.
They were terrible.
They're 8-4 so far in the month of July. They've been much better. You're exactly right, though. I mean, one of the bigger hurdles, I think, for this Royals team this year compared to last year. And yes, everybody obviously points towards the runners in scoring position numbers. And well, that's why the Royals don't have a winning record this year, is because they were a top 5 team in baseball last year with runners on second and third. And this year they're one of the worst in baseball. And you're not wrong. That is absolutely a contributing factor to this thing. But also, last year's Royals team was uncannily healthy over the course of 162 games, right? You had the hand injury, the wrist injury with Vinny, and he ended up missing time in the last couple months of the year. It kept him away from 100 RBIs on the year. But when you looked at Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans and Michael Wacha, I mean, that rotation in the bullpen was so healthy all year long, it was astonishing. Hasn't been the case this year. Cole Reagans has been in and out of the lineup all year. Now he's on the 60-day IL. Who knows if we'll see him again this season? We've seen Seth Lugo deal with a couple of different injuries. I know the Royals, outside of yesterday's game that's one of the longest starts of Noah Cameron's career in Kansas City, because they've been very particular about his pitch count and how deep they want him going into games. Same thing can kind of be said at times for Chris Bubich, but he's just been so good that you don't want to pull him in certain situations. And now you have this oblique strain for Michael Lorenzen. They put him on the 15-day IL today. The move is retroactive to Friday, with Lorenzen last pitching July 6th. That's 7 scoreless innings that he gave the Arizona Diamondbacks. So I'm not sure when he'll be allowed back. With that being a retroactive move to last Friday, it's going to be at least 2 weeks before we see him back in Kansas City. I guess maybe the Dallas Keuchel minor league signing makes a little bit more sense. I don't know what you do in that situation. Do you call up Dallas Keuchel for 2 weeks, or Rich Hill at 45 years old for 2 weeks? Do you give a prospect an opportunity for the first time over the course of 2 weeks? Or is it going to be like a Johnny Holstaff thing, like we saw the Royals do? I believe that was back on Saturday, where Lorenzen was scheduled to start, and they ended up saying, he's got an illness, which they said illness, and now it's an oblique strain. I'm not sure how to take that information.
I mean, we know what that is. we know what that is.
Why not just say he's got an injury?
Because you
got
to put him on the IL. That's why.
I guess.
Yeah, that's why you do what the Royals did. I don't blame them. I mean, the Chiefs have been doing that for years with guys that they want to keep through camp. My thing is, like, you probably end up doing what you did, where you kind of just do a bullpen game.
Yeah.
And you hope that your guys can hold out there. And I mean, really, unless Keuchel or Rich Hill give you absolutely every reason to believe in them, which, I mean, Rich Hill is not, he's getting shelled right now in the minors.
His last start, he struck out 10 across 5 innings.
Yeah, his ERA is still not good. And then, Keuchel, let's keep it a buck here. It's been a few years. It's been a little while since Keuchel was that dude.
Yeah, and if he's got a stipulation in his contract that if the Royals do call him up and he plays in major leagues, I don't even think he has to play. I think if he's just on the major league roster, retroactively, the man gets $2 million.
Yeah.
Is $2 million worth 2 weeks of your time potentially? And at this point, Keuchel's, 36, 37 years old? He hasn't won or pitched at a Cy Young level in at least a decade. I don't think that makes a ton of sense. But I look at a reliever like Daniel Lynch, who came up through the Royals system as a starter. He's been put into the bullpen, and he's been great this year. If you're going to go with a Johnny Holstaff sort of a game, Daniel Lynch gets the start and gives you three or four good innings, you know, or more if you want to thrust him into a starter sort of mindset for a couple of weeks if you want to. I think it's going to be fascinating because Lorenzen won't come back until like right at the trade deadline. And we have heard lots and lots of rumors about the Kansas City Royals and the top of that pitching rotation. And could we see a guy move, right? Seth Lugo has been tossed around a ton across Major League Baseball. I know pretty much every contending team in the majors would be very, very interested in acquiring Seth Lugo. But if you trade Lugo and Lorenzen, you know, a hiccup occurs with Lorenzen and you got to put him back on the 15-day IL again, now what? Now you went from having six starting pitchers to three. I'm still waiting around with bated breath to see if we ever see Alec Marsh or Kyle Wright back healthy at any point this year. And if so, would they be candidates for the rotation for this Kansas City Royals team?
I think if you're the Royals, like, you really kind of base it on the next couple weeks. How do you perform? Do you get back into the wild card race? Do you get yourself within, you know, a striking distance there where maybe if you do get healthier, you're able to make a run, and the last couple months you're able to sneak into the playoffs? The next couple weeks are really going to determine that. I think, though, if you're like, if you fall down back to where you were at the beginning of the month, what were they, six under 500?
Mm-hmm.
I think at that point you start considering moving Lugo at least, because, I mean, in all likelihood, he's not going to pick up that option after the year. And so that means that you're going to have to either pay him a lot of money to come back, or you're going to have to try to get someone else anyways. And I think at that point, let's keep it a buck about Lugo. I don't think anybody expected Lugo to do what he did when they brought him in last year. I think he's very much overperformed what expectations were the last couple years, really last year and a half. And so really the question is, do you really think he's going to do that all throughout the rest of this season and into maybe next year if you do bring him back? I'm not sure about that. I think unless you are in contention for sure for the wild card, I think you should definitely consider over the next couple weeks about what the price could be to move him somewhere else, because, I mean, you still got a lot of young, like, your core on this team, aside from Salvi, is still really young. So you definitely have to think about the long term here, and I don't think the Lugo is a long term solution for you. So unless you are in the race at the end of July, I think you should be fielding some calls for moving him and trying to get some prospects back, because the way that he's been pitching the last year and a half, he should fetch you a fairly decent value. You know, you're probably looking at a guy who maybe is major league ready next year or in 27 or something like that. And at that point, you're looking a lot, or maybe you trade him for an outfield bat. I mean, they certainly have a big need for that right now.
No question about it. And yeah, you mentioned his contract, right? That's the biggest thing with the Royals. You know, even if they have a desire, which I'm sure they do, to hold on to Seth Lugo, it's a $15 million player option for next year. His value arguably might be double that. I mean, look at, so Carlos Rodon, for example, right? Back in, 2023, signed that like 6-year deal with the New York Yankees at 30 years old that was worth somewhere around like 27 and a half million. He's making $27 million this year for the New York Yankees. That year that he signed with New York, his at age 30, he was coming off of a 2.88 ERA season with the San Francisco Giants. He was an all-star that year. He finished sixth in the Cy Young voting. Lugo had a 3 ERA last year. He won 16 games. He was second. He was the runner-up for the American League Cy Young. And somehow, His numbers are better this year at 2.67 ERA. He's got an ERA plus at the moment at 1.53, and his WHIP is below a 1.08, which is, I mean, those are remarkable numbers. So I think it's fair to say, no matter where Lugo ends up, he is going to decline that player option of $15 million a year, because he's got every opportunity in the world to make 25, if not 30 plus million dollars over the course of another 2-3 year deal, despite the fact that he'll be 36 years old.
I mean, at least 20 a year for sure. Yeah, he's 35 going on 36. So, like, that is a concern for sure if you're a team that's looking to try to get him. But, yeah, certainly he's going to go out and definitely get a nice little pay raise, get into the 20s for sure on a AAV basis. And on top of that, it's like, if you're the Royals, it's like, do you want to sign him to an extension and then – the bottom falls out on what he's doing right now? Because, again, as I just said a few minutes ago, it's like he's overperforming expectations by a lot. Like, nobody expected him to come in and do what he did last year and then for him to be better this year. I don't think very many people expected him to go out there and do that. And so, especially with how important pitching is right now in today's Major League Baseball, I think you should definitely, I mean, obviously, again, this depends on position. And if you are in the race at the end of July, if you are very much in the race and you are confident that you're going to get healthier as a team, I absolutely think that you should keep him and then deal with the consequences later of if he decides to decline his option, which I think we assume he will. And whatever happens, happens. But I think if you are not in the race, if you're back to where you were at the beginning of the month, you should definitely start looking at selling some guys that you don't think are going to be here for the long term so that you can build for the long term, because you got Bobby under contract for years to come. And I think you have opportunities to win in the future as long as you build your team right.
And that raises an interesting question, right? We've sort of been talking about the Royals as buyers or sellers in a little bit of a roundabout way to begin our show tonight. I kind of want to go a little bit more in depth with that on the other side of the break here. You're listening to After Hours, Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks, Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views, on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Do we see the Royals as buyers or sellers at the MLB trade deadline? It comes up on July 31st. Royals right now are sitting only three games below 500, 47 and 50. They are, at the moment, I think they're 11 and a half games back of the Detroit Tigers in the AL Central, 12 games back, excuse me, of the Tigers in the Central. The Twins are 11 and a half games back. So the Royals only a half game back of Minnesota. They're only four games out of a wild card spot in the American League, and it is an absolute log jam right now. You've got the Yankees, Red Sox, and Mariners holding on to the three wild card spots. The Rays are a game and a half back, Rangers three and a half back, and then you've got the Twins and the Angels four games back, Royals, Guardians four and a half games back. It's a lot of teams within five games of a wild card spot in the American League at the moment. So what do the Royals do? I think that a lot of things have been thrown, you know, that have thrown a wrench into what we thought the Royals might do, right? Of course, today's announcement of the oblique strain with Lorenzen puts him out for 15, you know, at least 15 days. Reagan's being put on the 60-day IL last week throws another wrench into things. So you went from being this rotation, this starter-rich organization with so many options at your disposal to a little bit limited in a position where you had tremendous trade value, right? If Reagans was still healthy, if Lorenzen was healthy, then the sting of losing Seth Lugo, while it would still be strong, it wouldn't be as, I think, detrimental to the Royals season as a whole as it would be right now. Because without Reagans, Lugo is more or less the ace of this staff now. And now you rid yourself of Lugo, yes, you still have a quality top three in the form of Chris Bubich, who is right now in Atlanta for the All-Star game after a remarkable first half. Noah Cameron has burst onto the scene and done remarkable things for the Royals this year. Michael Wacha, despite the fact, I mean, he had a really good first 3 months. I shouldn't say 3 months necessarily. He struggled in June, and he struggled even more here in July. I just wonder if you're trading away Seth Lugo, what are you getting back? Right? I mean, I look at, because it's a rent, right? It's a rental. It is a half year rental for Seth Lugo at this point. He's not accepting the $15 million player option. I think the team with the greatest chance of possibly getting him to pick up a $15 million player option is the Kansas City Royals, if they just stayed pat and held on to him. And I still think those chances are incredibly slim. So you look at renta players in MLB history, right? Randy Johnson for Carlos Guillen, Freddie Garcia, John Halama. You know, Garcia and Guillen ended up being fairly decent players. Remember when Mark Teixeira got traded all those years ago to Atlanta, and the Rangers ended up getting Naftali Feliz, Jared Saltalamacchia, and Elvis Andrus out of that trade? Three really quality players that ended up playing major roles in getting the Rangers back to prominence during the early to mid parts of the 2010s. The Aroldis Chapman trade back about 10 years ago, when he was at like the height of his power, he was pitching for New York, the Yankees, and they traded him to the Cubs for Gleyber Torres, who was at the time the top prospect in the Yankees system. I think Seth Lugo, if you find the right contender, you could get back some really, really good pieces. You could get back, I would say, a trio of top 20 prospects in somebody's system, including maybe a top three or a top five prospect from an organization. The question is going to be who those prospects are. And is prospects worth your time at this point when you're three games out of 500? I have a really hard time believing you could trade Seth Lugo to a contender for an MLB-ready bat, which is what the Royals need the most right now.
Like I said, it really depends on where you are at the deadline, and it also depends on what you think Reagan's health is going to look like once we start nearing the time designated on his IL stint. If you're not confident he's going to be back this year, which there is some talk that he might not be back this year, you probably should move Lugo, because I don't think you're going to compete if you do not have Reagan's. I know that's probably tough for a lot of people to hear, but I think that Reagan's is your best pitcher. I don't know how much of a debate that is. I know he's had some times where he's been shaky and whatnot, but still, I think, you know, when he's on his game, he's your best pitcher by far. And I don't think you can compete in the playoffs if you don't have him. So it's like, what is more important? You know, making a run at the playoffs and then you don't make it because you don't have enough pitchers, you don't have enough arms because you had a lot of injuries, or you move somebody that you is more than likely not going to be on your team next year, is going to hit the market, is going to try to get as much money as he can, because, like, let's keep it a buck, Lugo don't have, he don't have a whole lot of time left to try to make big money. I mean, he has not pitched at this level before, and he's 35 now. And we know, like, these guys aren't pitching well into their 40s like they used to. Like, we used to see a lot of these guys. There's very limited time left on his arm right now. So he's going to want to maximize how much money he can make before he retires. And I don't think he's going to maximize that here in Kansas City next year. So I think it makes a lot of sense if you're the Royals, unless you are absolutely contention and unless you are absolutely certain that you're going to see Cole Reagans on the mound this year again, and you're confident that your bats are going to get in order and get things going, I think you move Lugo. If you get, I mean, you're probably not going to get anybody that's MLB ready right now. But maybe next year that whoever you acquire in that trade, maybe they make that jump at some point next year. Or maybe they're able to start the year in 27 making that jump. And I know that's not something that a lot of people want to hear, but that really is the reality of the situation here. The Royals have a lot of pieces that they need in order to be able to get back into being this perennial contender. And right now you don't have the bats for that. And you do have the pitching for it, but it's not a long-term solution with the pitching. So I think at this point, you know, the way things are looking, if Reagan's not out there and if you're not, things aren't looking too good as far as the standings go, which they didn't a couple weeks ago, I think your best bet is to move Lugo and go get some value back that can help you in the long term.
Another question, you know, that maybe it's an unfair one to ask because the team does still have a year technically of team control remaining. Is there a possibility that the Royals deal Chris Bubich? His value cannot, I mean, it's nearly impossible for his value to exceed where it is at right now as an all-star in the American League, fresh off of Tommy John surgery, to have the kind of year he's having. He's 27 years old. He's eligible for arbitration next year, but in 2027, he's an unrestricted free agent. So do you take advantage of the opportunity with the value he's got right now? Because who knows if it's sustainable, right? I mean, is it really the Royals' best prerogative to hold on to him long-term when you already have a ton of money tied up into Bobby Witt Jr.? You've given Cole Reagans the long-term extension, and it's not like you can trade him right now, not when he's sitting on the 60-day IL. I mean, who's going to try to make a move for him? If you hold on to him for another year, great, and I understand why the Royals would want to do that, but how likely is it that Chris Bubich is going to continue to pitch the rest of this season and the first half of next year as well as he has pitched this year? Is he going to have a sub-2.5 ERA at this same time next year when he's in that final year of arbitration before he becomes an unrestricted free agent? But then it becomes, okay, so we're talking about trading Seth Lugo and Chris Bubich. Cole Reagans is hurt. Lorenzen's hurt right now. So Noah Cameron and Michael Walker are just your starters right now. Alec Marsh and Kyle Wright have hit setbacks in the last couple of weeks with their returns to baseball. And it's not like the Royals have a ton of arms in AAA that could give you a bunch. Chandler Champlain has an 8.64 ERA in Omaha this year. Thomas Hatch has an ERA north of 4. And honestly, he might be your best option. Because then you've got John Gant with a 5.75. Lundur Avila has a 4.97. Rich Hill has a 5.63 ERA. There's nobody in AAA that you can look at definitively if you're the Kansas City Royals and say, oh yeah, that guy can make his way back up to the majors and pitch for us this year. I think the Royals might end up being stuck between a rock and a hard place in trying to trade away anybody because I'm not sure they have enough arms to... Again, in my view, if the Royals become sellers, they are going to absolutely fall apart in the last 2 months of this season. When we get to August 1st, if they trade Lugo or Bubich or both by some, you know, strange circumstance, they're going to go 15-45 in the last 60 games of the year. They're going to absolutely fall off a cliff because you're not going to have enough pitching to hold up in the bottom half of your rotation.
And you know what? That might suck for the final couple months of the year,
right?
But it is what it is. I absolutely think they should. First off, I think they should keep Bubich. I wouldn't move him. I understand, like, he's kind of defying a lot of expectations because it's not like he's got crazy velocity, and yet he's still, I mean, he's pitching like well above, I think, what a lot of people expected from him. A lot of people assumed that he was just going to be a bullpen guy, and he's come in as a starter, and he's proven that he definitely, at least for this year, belongs there. I think if you're the Royals, this is kind of where if you're a team like the Royals, you roll the dice a little bit. I would keep him throughout the rest of this year. And then early next year, you're going to have your arbitration situation before the season. But I would seriously consider giving him some type of extension. You know, the number is going to be a little tough because, again, you're working off of really 1 year of him pitching great as a starter. So, but that might actually work in your favor a little bit. And maybe it's a situation where he gets some money, but he doesn't get all the money that someone pitching at the level that he pitched at this year would get for that kind of a performance. And you get somebody, you know, let's say you sign him to like a 5-year extension. Well, obviously he's going to get more money during that time period, because it's not like he has a whole lot of big time money. Like, I think this year he's making less than $2.5 million on the season. So it's like, it's not like he's looking at making a ton of money here. I think it makes a lot of sense to wait the season out. If he keeps performing at this level, see if you can talk into a decent extension. He's not getting crazy money, but he's getting good money. And hopefully that ties you, you know, that's able to tie you over for the next 4 or 5 years. And you can kind of kick this can down the road when he's in his early 30s. That's what I think the ideal situation is. But I'm not really in the business of moving somebody that you have a couple more years of control over. And on top of that, you're looking at his situation and you're like, yeah, maybe we can extend him because we kind of found something in him that we didn't think we were going to get initially. So I would at least try to see if you can get an extension out of him if you really believe that what you've seen this year is something that he can kind of replicate, maybe not quite at the same level, but even somewhere close. If you believe he could be like a low to mid 3 ERA guy, I think you extend him.
A low to mid 3 ERA guy, and at the moment he's in the back half of your rotation, that's house money that you're playing with at that point. I mean, he is.
And obviously he would move up in the rotation for sure. Because, you know, at that point, like, we would assume that you move Lugo and whatnot. So he would obviously move up in there. He'd probably be one of your top 3 guys in your rotation. But even then, like, if you could get him at a good value, you have, you know, good amount of team control on him, good number there. You at least don't have to worry about one spot, two spots in your rotation with him and Reagans for a while.
Yeah, you look at, I mean, next year, let's face it, we get to spring training next year, March of 26. Seth Lugo is not going to be a member of the Kansas City Royals. I have a very, very hard time believing that. Whether that means the Royals traded him here in the next 2 weeks or held on to him and they got through the regular season here this year, he's going to decline that player option and he's going to sign big money somewhere. And more likely than not, it's going to be one of those top 5, top 6 markets in baseball. It's going to be New York or Los Angeles or San Diego or Boston, somewhere like that. So you look at next year, and if you hold on to Bubich and you somehow give him a long-term extension, you gave Waka and Reagans the extensions last year. You've got Noah Cameron for the long haul because he's a rookie, so you still have plenty of years of team control left under him. That's a really solid top 4 of your starting pitching rotation. And then that number 5, if it's going to be Michael Lorenzen again next year, fine. Could it be Kyle Wright or Alec Marsh if they finally decide to get healthy, or if they try to go sign another arm in free agency? Who knows? But I think the Royals have, scarily enough, I think for Royals fans, they have a lot of avenues they can go here, at least as of this moment, right? What happens over the next 2 weeks is going to be the ultimate deciding factor. But I think it's fair to say in the world that exists right now, the Royals could be buyers or sellers. Just don't know. And that's the problem when you're sitting around 500 as you approach the July 31st deadline. 913-586-7965 is our number. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero. More Royals and Chiefs news coming up. The MLB trade deadline, the MLB home run derby is right around the corner as well here tonight. We'll talk about all of that right here on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Of course, it is All-Star Week in Major League Baseball, but the other side of the coin is that it's also a look, potentially, at the future of Major League Baseball. MLB draft kicked off yesterday, continued today. Yesterday, the Kansas City Royals, with the 23rd pick, took Sean Gamble. He is an outfielder slash second baseman from IMG Academy out in Florida. So a high school bat for the Royals in round one. He has tremendous bat speed. He's an athletic freak, according to some of the folks at MLB Network that have had a chance to see him and scout him. They list him as more of an outfielder, but there were guys last night during the draft on MLB Network who were saying that they saw him more as a potential second base prospect. Not sure what that means for the Royals necessarily. I mean, Jonathan India and his time in Kansas City. Now, I mean, he's a high school bat, so it's obviously going to take him a little bit of time to make his way up to the big leagues. But, you know, India's in the midst of what, a 2-year deal? I guess he's got a year of arbitration left after next year, and then he'll be a free agent in 2027. So could be just enough time for a guy like Sean Gamble to rise up and take that spot in the middle infield alongside Bobby Witt Jr. Then the Royals had another pick in the first round based off of the fact that Bobby Witt Jr. had finished runner-up for the American League MVP last year. So it was a performance-based incentive for the Royals. And they took another high school bat, Josh Hammond, from Wesleyan Christian Academy in North Carolina. He is a shortstop slash third baseman. Obviously, don't think it's likely he plays shortstop for the Kansas City Royals. There appears to be a bit of a logjam at that position with the best shortstop in baseball sitting there right now. So third base could be a possibility for him, but with Mikel Garcia playing the way he is. But Mikel's, 27 years old. This kid's 17, 18, so there's obviously enough time for that. I mean, guys, both of them, people raved about their ability to hit the baseball, which is obviously the Royals' biggest need right now. And then in the second and third rounds, the Royals made a run on some pitching. They took Michael Lombardi out of Tulane in the second round with the 61st overall pick. With the 71st pick, they took Justin Lampkin from Texas A&M. He's a left-handed hurler. And then they took Cameron Millar from a high school arm from California with the 97th pick. And then, took a handful of guys today, outfielder from Creighton, Aiden Jimenez, a right-handed pitcher from Arkansas, had a really good year with the Razorbacks. Tyreek Kemp, who was an All-Big 12 player at Baylor this year. They took a kid from Texas State. A lot of college guys that I'm looking at here, at least in terms of today's picks, rounds 4 through 20 for Kansas City. We'll see what happens, all right? We're going to sit here and walk through the hypotheticals of a bunch of high school and college kids that the Royals drafted who are all several years away from being able to contribute to this Royals team if they make it that far. But it's always fun to look towards the future, right? A little bit. 913-586-7965 is our number. The Home Run Derby in Major League Baseball is set to begin in about 15 minutes. I'll ask the question, is anybody watching? Does anybody really care about the Home Run Derby anymore? We'll discuss that next right here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
All-Star Week in Major League Baseball is officially set to begin here in about 15 minutes or so with the Home Run Derby at Truist Park in Atlanta. Of course, it's headlined by Cal Raleigh, who is having a remarkable year. 38 home runs at the All-Star break, which is second most in Major League history at this point in the year, behind only what Barry Bonds accomplished in 2001. He hit 39 at the break on his way to the 73 home runs he hit that year to set the all-time record for a single season. After that, it becomes a little bit underwhelming, the Home Run Derby participants. You got James Wood, who's hit 24 this year. He's had a really, really remarkable breakout year for the Nationals, former highly prized prospect. Junior Camarino from the Tampa Bay Rays with 21. Byron Buxton's got 21. Dude just hit for the cycle last weekend, which was exciting. Brent Rooker of the A's is at 20 home runs this year. Then you've got Matt Olson, who has hit 17 home runs this year. He was a late entry for his teammate, Ronald Acuna Jr. Jazz Chisholm of the New York Yankees, a guy who shouldn't be an all-star and obviously should not be in the home run derby, but he's in there with his 17 long balls this year. And then O'Neill Cruz of the Pittsburgh Pirates with 16 home runs is the eighth and final participant. And I just have to ask, because I understand that Major League Baseball has to invite these players and they have to agree to participate. So you look at, you know, Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge and some of these other guys who are among the major league leaders in home runs. These guys obviously chose not to participate. Eugenio Suarez and Kyle Schwarber and Seiya Suzuki, which that guy didn't even make the freaking All-Star game. So why would he agree to participate in the home run derby when he got screwed out of an All-Star game appearance? Does anybody really care about the home run derby anymore? Like, they've changed and manipulated the rules to where it's not as much fun as it used to be when guys just had the 10 outs. Like, does everybody recall, I believe it was 2008, when Josh Hamilton went absolutely nuclear at the home run derby? One of the best home run derby, if not the best home run derby performance of all time. That's just not the way that it is anymore. I don't know what happened to the home run derby or the Major League Baseball All-Star game for that matter, but it feels like every other sport, right? Like All-Star games and Pro Bowls and things like skills challenges, the players don't care anymore. So why should the fans?
I think the thing we have to realize is that sometimes things change. The All-Star formula is kind of an obsolete format. Like, when we were younger, like, I remember, I 90s kid, like, the Pro Bowl was great. It was after the Super Bowl. It was the Sunday after the Super mm-hmm. Bowl. It was awesome. Guys were hitting. Guys were trying because, I mean, these guys were competitors. And they weren't making the kind of crazy money that they're making now. So you had a lot to prove when you were playing in those games like that, because there weren't very many guys who were making crazy money. Now, all of these guys who are at the top of their position are making crazy money. So you're talking about, and now a lot of these guys are taking up a significant chunk of their team's payroll or their team's salary cap in comparison to back then. And that means that there's more risk, especially because we kind of got into ring culture because of Michael Jordan. And so now we unfairly diminish the accomplishments of any players that don't win rings. And now we have made it so that if you're a head coach and if you're really good, but you don't win a ring, well, you should probably be fired. You know, we do that to diminish, like we see that with Sean McDermott right now, where it's like people diminish his accomplishments in Buffalo because he can't get past the best quarterback and the best head coach in football right now. And I think that's a little unfair to him. And we use that to diminish the accomplishments of people who do great things, but they just aren't the best. And I feel like because of that, now we've created this kind of short-term gratification when it comes to success, where it's like, if you don't give us results quick, you're gone.
Mm.
And if you're a player that gets hurt, you could potentially ruin that window that you have to win a title. So the stakes are really high now in comparison to back then, where, like, you know, if you were a team that made the playoffs every year, the belief was, hey, maybe one of these years we'll get a title. But, like, if you make the playoffs 3 years in a row and you don't go far in the playoffs, now people start asking questions. And they start asking questions about the players, the coaches, the general manager. And so there's a lot at risk, and teams don't want to risk that. And that's the reason why a lot of these guys now don't care about these All-Star games. Because it's like, this game doesn't matter. I'm not getting money off of it the way that I would regular season games. And if I get hurt, I'm costing myself money because the risk is much higher. So I get it. It's just kind of an obsolete format because in today's sports world, in today's game, it's all about trying to maximize opportunities for championships. And if you get hurt in a game that's just an exhibition, you really kind of hurt your opportunity to maximize the and play into ring culture.
Especially in a sport like Major League Baseball or the NBA or the NHL, in which their All-Star game, you know, is during the season, right? It's smack dab in the middle, or I guess, you know, just past the midway point of the year where, yeah, I mean, if Aaron Judge were to participate in the home run derby tonight and for some reason would, you know, tear his rotator cuff or something while trying to hit a ball out of Truist Park in Atlanta tonight, it would completely upend the New York Yankees season. And I think that's an interesting point that you raise there. I mean, the Pirate, you know, O'Neill Cruz with the Pirates, Matt Olson with the Braves, Brent Rooker with the A's, Byron Buxton with the Twins, James Wood with the Nationals, right? Those guys are on teams that obviously are not contending, right? They're not going to be playoff teams, postseason teams, more likely than not. Now, Jazz Chisholm with the Yankees and you know, Junior Caminero with the Rays and Cal Raleigh with the Mariners, those are obviously different. And if you're Cal Raleigh, you're taking advantage of one of the only opportunities you may ever have to participate in something like this with the year that you've had. Take advantage of it.
Yeah, but he's not thinking about that though. I mean, and here's another thing about the home run derby specifically. A lot of guys talk about how it screws up their swing because you're hitting for home runs instead of just trying to get good contact.
Right.
And because of that, you've seen a lot of these sluggers now get away from hitting in the home run derby, because they feel like it messes them up. And especially when you're talking about at this point in the year where you're in the middle of July, these games start to mean a little bit more, especially if you're right on the cusp, because you have less room for error and you can't really afford like a 2-week slump because you spend all this time trying to get ready for the home run derby and trying to get your swing intact for that. And now you have to go back to just trying to get good contact instead of trying to get, you know, barrel the ball and lift it up so you can try to get it out the park. So I think that's another one of the reasons why you don't quite see as much of the top guys perform year in, year out like you've seen in the past.
I think that's a really good point that you raise. The only thing I'm really looking forward to from the home run derby is to see Jazz Chisholm struggle and lose in the first round. I don't understand how the man made the All-Star game. I really don't understand how he made the home run derby.
It's a popularity contest. That's the reason why, like, me and Vern had this talk, it was a couple weeks ago, I think, off air. It was like, and I was like, because he was asking me about, like, whoever the kid from the A's is who got the start over Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah,
and
Jacob Wilson.
And I was just like, man, it's a popularity contest. Like, I realized how unimportant the All-Star games were when Yao Ming in his last year in the NBA got voted into the All-Star game, even though he couldn't play because his ankles were so bad because he kept getting all these microfractures there. But he got voted in because popularity. And it's like, that's the thing I think we have to understand about these All-Star games, is they don't mean as much as they used to because now it's just a popularity contest. There isn't people who are watching every one of these teams out here, and there's not as much, like, the national TV ratings for these games, not as high as they used to be because people are watching their games regionally.
Yeah.
And that means that you don't have as much knowledge about the teams that are playing on the national scale. Like, half these players I haven't heard of. And it's just because I don't have any interest to watch, like, pay attention to it on a national level. I'm just going to watch the Royals when I can, but it's just, it doesn't have that same mainstream appeal that it once had.
913-586-7965 is our number. We're going to take a break, come back, get you set for hour two of After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.